Blog Talk Radio.
Con los terroristas.
All right, welcome to Sportsaholics 24/7. We're back with a live episode. Thank you for joining us on your Thursday night. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll be talking about college football, do some NBA predictions, season just 5 days away. Maybe talk a little NFL with big trade, Percy Harvin to the Jets, some of the upcoming games this weekend. All right, so we're going to start
and the World Series.
Football.
And the World Series.
Yes, the World Series, of course.
Forget about the World Series now.
All right, so we'll lead off with some college football. Obviously, the biggest game this past weekend was the night game. You had number 5 Notre Dame going off against number 2 Florida State. It's kind of weird saying number 2 for Florida State, but that was the scenario. And Florida State got really lucky at the end with that penalty call against Notre Dame, that pass interference on the offense, just a horrible play to make right there. Florida State escapes barely with a close win against Notre Dame and stays on track for the playoffs for the end of the season. So we'll start with you, John. What do you think about this game, and what do you learn more about Florida State or Notre Dame?
Well, I think that it was an incredible game. I think it'll probably go down as the game of the season, and it was only halfway through the season. To talk about the call quickly, I agree with that call. I think it was pass interference. It's unfortunate that it had to be such a crucial play, and people are saying let the players play, whatever. But you know what? You can't do that. That's illegal. You can't do what Will Fuller, the Notre Dame receiver, you can't do what he did. So I do agree with that call. What I learned about the team. So first of all, I learned that Notre Dame is a legitimate team. They went into Tallahassee, and they could have easily come out of there with a win. I mean, that game really could have gone either way. And I think that if Notre Dame runs the table for the rest of the season, if they finish the season 11-1, I feel like the final playoff spot will be down to the winner of the Big Ten, if they only have one loss, and Notre Dame. In terms of Florida State, I learned that they're back. They didn't leave, obviously, but some people didn't take them seriously this year. And then all the off-the-field stuff with Jameis Winston, a lot of question marks, and they proved that they could definitely be the best team in the country.
And, Nick, what did you think about not only this game, but in general, both Florida State and Notre Dame?
Well, to break down the game for you, I think Notre Dame should have won that game. That call, I'm kind of down the middle. I kind of have to take another look at it. It was controversial. I can't really say one call over the other. But Notre Dame played an overall better game. I really do think that they played an overall better game. In the beginning, in the first half, Notre Dame, without question, outplayed Florida State. Florida State didn't know how to strategize. And what their defense was doing that I didn't get is that they were so nuts about – they're basically doing what the Jets often do. They're nuts about getting to the quarterback and not letting Everett Golson beat them with his feet. But my feeling is Everett Golson is a great passer as well as a runner. So if he's not going to beat you with his feet, then he's just going to beat you with his arm. And that's not going to work. And not only that, Notre Dame is such a strong offensive line. They're such a crafty offense. Brian Kelly's a great coach, and Everett Golson's such a smart quarterback that when he wants to beat you with his feet, he's going to beat you with his feet. So at least in the second half, Florida State came to their senses and started playing, you know, at least playing some plays in the backfield. Because I remember, Jalen, they were playing like a 46 defense-esque kind of defense, like what the Jets often play, and it's not going to work. Notre Dame is a legitimate team with weapons in the running game and the passing game, and they're playing them like they're Georgia Tech or Navy or Army. That's basically completely consisting of running. They really underestimated their passing game and what Everett Golson can do as a passer. So Everett Golden has really proved himself as a passer and not just as like a Geno Smith kind of type of just running quarterback that game.
And, John, I really did like what you said before. I think going into the season, Florida State was definitely number one, but so far it kind of seems like they have been a little overlooked. If you look at the success of teams like Mississippi State and Ole Miss kind of coming out of nowhere and having just great success, I don't think Florida State's schedule has been very tough. I think they've had, besides this Notre Dame game, some
they've
pretty
had
easy games.
Easy schedule, besides Notre
right.
Dame.
But they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. I mean, they're winning. I think Jameis Winston is right, picking up right where he left off last year. He's had some really great games. And to me, they just seem like right now the best team in the country. I think them and Mississippi State right now are the two top teams.
I think that's a little bit of a stretch. Now, maybe they will end up being the best team in the country, but you can't say that yet because you've had an easy schedule. The only legitimate team they beat was Notre Dame. And I guess you can count Clemson, but Clemson's not even nearly on that level. So, I mean, now listen, I'm not saying they're not a great team. They're definitely at least the top five team. But the best team in the country, I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I want to see them get put into different competition and see what they can do. Because they barely slipped
their
past Notre Dame. So I would just like
to
see that game could have gone. Notre Dame should have won that game.
It'll be interesting to see what happens to Notre Dame and a few of the other top teams in the coming weeks. But before we move on, we have a caller on the line. Put him on right now. Welcome to Sportsaholics. What's your name?
Yitzchak.
Oh, Yitzchak, welcome to the show. So, do you have a question, comment? What do you want to talk about?
Basically, I saw that the Mets might sign Michael Kadire, and I wanted to see what you thought about that.
I think that's a very good move because the Mets need that. The only thing is that Michael Kadire is not as much of a power hitter as the Mets might want, like to have that fourth guy in the order. He's almost like a Daniel Murphy or a David Wright kind of player with a little more power. If I were to have a choice, I'd rather get a Giancarlo Stanton or a Nelson Cruz or Jose Abreu, a guy that's a legitimate number four hitter who can really bring pop to the lineup. Michael Kadire doesn't quite have that, but he's a great addition. And the Mets need offense. They have no offense besides Murph and Wright.
Right. I think if they would have tried, I think they should get like more of a Bryce Harper type player, but Kadire would be a good start.
Kadire would definitely be a good fit, and I know he can play shortstop, and as far as I'm concerned, the Mets do not have a shortstop. I mean,
right.
They have Ruben Tejada, who's a great defensive shortstop, but he can't hit. Wilmer Flores is the complete opposite. I'm not sold on Flores yet.
Yeah, they
Mets
need someone
fall.
Both.
Yeah, you're right, because Mets fans fall in love with mediocrity, and that's basically what Wilmer Flores did so far. I'm not sold on him yet.
And, you know, I looking at this potential Michael Kadire signing, I think I wouldn't necessarily say he's washed up. He's definitely getting up there in age, but he did have a great season last year. He posted a nice batting average, but for the Mets,
yeah,
I really still
true.
Think they really need to get healthy, first of all, and even when they are healthy, I think they're still a good 2 to 3 years away from developing more prospects and really having a chance to compete and make the playoffs. So it's kind of like the Curtis Granderson and Bartolo Colon signings. They're getting these, I don't really know what their approach is, trying to sign these older players and have, you know, keep them for 2 years instead of, you know, full-out rebuilding. And they haven't made the playoffs.
I just want to add quickly that I think that the fact that the Mets have a solid pitching staff, especially if they can keep Matt Harvey. You know, they have some young guys. DeGrom is very good. I think now that'll be easier for them this offseason. They could really focus on getting a guy with a big bat, and they can throw their money at some people.
Well, I mean, that's true, but I think what they're getting him for is that basically they're getting these old people just so they could, like, train the younger players.
That's possible, yeah.
It's yes and no,
right,
but I mean, that's why they have coaches. So
true, right, but
thanks
I
for
mean,
the call.
Like, as a
thanks for the call. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
All right, so we'll be moving on to our next category for the show. 5 days. Got the NBA season coming up. It's gonna be one of the most anticipated seasons in a really long time. So many great storylines in terms of moves over the offseason. And we'll get into our predictions in a second. So we'll start with you, Nick. If you have to give me, we'll say, top four from the East and top four from the West, and who you think comes out on top and what teams stack up around the top of each conference. We'll start with that.
The Bulls, Miami Heat. I know they don't have LeBron anymore, but you know what? They're in the East. The East sucks, okay? The Bulls, the Heat, the Pacers, and...
Well, the Pacers and the Bulls are the same. Oh, wait, you're talking about the division winners or the top four teams?
Not division winners, just the top four teams.
Okay.
Top four teams.
You say
the Pacers?
Yep, I still think they can... Because it's not a compliment to the Pacers, but the East is terrible. I don't have anything. You know what? And you know who I think my fourth team is going to be? You're going to kill me for it. I think the Knicks.
I think the Knicks, you got to stop there.
What are the top four teams? Why not?
Nick, listen.
Why not?
I'm not even picking the Pacers to make the playoffs.
All right.
Paul George is out for the year. They lose Lance Stephenson. They lost Danny Granger last year. Now they lost
Everybody
Evan Turner, who they got for Danny
somebody.
Granger.
Everybody. I think the Bulls are going to be the best team in the East. Easily.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Nick,
listen up, Nick.
Hold on.
Nick.
You're forgetting the best team in the East, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, I totally forgot about Cleveland. Crap.
I mean, it's...
Nick.
I totally forgot about Cleveland.
It's not even a competition, honestly.
You're right.
I mean, here's what I'll say
totally
about Cleveland. I think in terms of star power with the big three of LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving, I don't think any team can really match up to them in terms of talent. But I think kind of what we saw 4 years ago with Miami when they first teamed up is they really struggled in the beginning. I think it's going to take a while for them to find chemistry. And I probably put the Bulls right there at number two in the conference. I mean, I think the essential trade-off of Carlos Boozer for Pau Gasol. I think Pau Gasol is a much better player in terms of what he can do in the post, passing. I think he really fits that offense in Chicago. And I think if Derrick Rose can stay healthy, I think they're going to be right up there with Cleveland. It's going to be a battle probably in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I'd say I'd probably put Washington at number three. I think they'll win their division. And I like the addition of Paul Pierce, and I think they got a really complete starting five. And, Nick, you said the Knicks at four. I think in my predictions, I put the Knicks at number eight. I think they'll sneak
number
into the playoffs. And... No, it's going to sound a little biased. I think it's going to sound a little biased, but I'm not being biased here. I really do believe the Nets will win the Atlantic Division. I think it's going to be between them and the Raptors. And if you look at what happened last year, they played a really even playoff series. I think in total, the 11 games between the Nets and the Raptors, they were tied. They were dead tied in points. And what I think the Raptors last year, they won 40-something games, high 40s in games. And they really had a chance. They finished third in the conference, played a close series with the Nets. And I don't think they're going to be able to repeat what they did last year. I think Kyle Lowry played out of his mind. I think they didn't do anything in the offseason. They didn't add anyone. And I think the Nets are going under the radar really quietly, unlike recent years. I think Jason Kidd is now gone. Terrible coach. You saw players like Joe Johnson saying the Nets didn't even practice last year. I think Lionel Hollins will implement a much better system. They got a healthy Brook Lopez. I think they got more talent than the Raptors. And if you win your division, you're going to be a top four team in the East. So
first
I think that rounds out my top four.
First of all, I'm just going to have to rebut one of the comments that you just made. Brook Lopez, we don't know if he's completely healthy. The injury he had, especially for a guy of his size, is very, very, very hard to recover from. It's almost unrecoverable. So we don't even know about that. You think you're going to have a healthy D. Will? I think not. D. Will is a shell of his former self. He's not going to be the same. And, you know, without those two guys, I don't see them being that good of a team. And I think Mason Plumlee is the most overrated center in the game. He's horrible.
Nick, I don't know what you're saying.
I honestly think the best way to deal with what you just said is just to kind of ignore it, because that is, as Stephen A. Smith would say, that's blasphemous. Mason Plumlee is very good.
Oh,
and to say he's the most overrated center in the league is is beyond me, honestly. I think he's very underrated, if anything.
If you look two years ago, Brook Lopez pretty much had the same exact injury, missed pretty much the whole season, and he came back the next year and was an all-star. Put up over 20 points per game.
I'm not saying that can't happen, but I'm saying there's a good chance that it won't happen because of that injury. I'm not sold on him.
If he stays
healthy,
he's
going to
be the same player. If he stays healthy, from what we saw in the preseason, he's going to be the same player. And you talk about one of the most dominant offensive centers in the game, and adding, I really can't believe you said Mason Plumlee is the most overrated center in the NBA. If anything, he's one of the most underrated centers in the NBA.
What makes Plumlee so great?
He's great. Nothing. He's great on defense. He can block shots.
Okay.
He can finish extremely well around the.
He's a little twig. Okay. He is not the right size for a center.
Nick, I don't know what you're saying, honestly. Honestly, because Plumlee's a 7-footer. He's a freak of an athlete. He's a young guy. He can still develop. What?
Right. He can develop.
He is a freak of an athlete, okay?
How? He's not a freak of an athlete.
Yes. Have you watched him play a basketball game before, Nick?
He's not a freak of an athlete. He's a good athlete.
Nick, I'm questioning whether you've ever seen Mason Plumlee play a basketball game before.
I've seen him play many times. He's not a freak of an athlete.
If Darren Williams lobs the ball anywhere remotely close to the basket, Plumlee's going to alley-oop it. That's just the bottom line. John's completely right.
Not.
He's a great athlete. He can finish really well around the hoop. He's developing his offensive game. We saw great improvement towards the end of last year, and I really don't know why we're still even arguing about this. So we'll move on to John, give you a chance to give your predictions for the East.
All right, for the East, like I said before, I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are easily the best team. You know, Jordan was mentioning before, looking back on the Miami Heat situation, their first season, they didn't really gel that well. I think there's a difference, though, because this Cavs team, they've kept a lot of the same guys. That same core group of players, they're still there. Kyrie, Varejao, you know, they still have a lot of players that have played together for a while, and putting LeBron in, I think LeBron's going to realize this is a little different than what he was in Miami. He could play more in his own. He's going to be more comfortable. I think he's back where he belongs. I think they're going to be the best team, second best team, if Derrick Rose can stay healthy, and that's a big if. The Chicago Bulls will be the second best team, third best team. I honestly think the Washington Wizards. With the addition of Paul Pierce, they're going to be solid. Last year, they were very good, John Wall and Bradley Beal. Arguably the best backcourt in the NBA. And fourth, I got to go with the Brooklyn Nets. Again, the East is very weak. I think the Brooklyn Nets would be near the middle to bottom of the Western Conference. But in the East, I think that they're the fourth seed. They made some nice additions in the offseason with Jarrett Jack. They got a new head coach who actually coaches, and I think they'll be pretty good.
All right, and we'll go right back to you, John, for the Western Conference. I think we pretty much know, we can agree that San Antonio and Oklahoma City are probably the two top teams in the West. We can agree on that, assuming Kevin Durant is healthy. So who stacks up in what order in the middle of the Western Conference?
All right, well, here are some teams that I like. I really love the Portland Trail Blazers. I think Damian Lillard is, within the next few years, he's going to become one of the best point guards in the league. So I definitely have them up there. I also have the Houston Rockets, too. James Harden and Dwight Howard, two great players, two superstars on the same team. They had a very good season last year, and I think they'll only get better. Of course, you got to look at the Clippers. I mean, they have a ton of star power. Lob City, they have plenty of great athletes on that team. And I just want to make one bold prediction quickly before I move on to Nick's predictions. The Los Angeles Lakers, by the end of this season, either Byron Scott or Kobe Bryant will no longer be with the team. One of those two will no longer be with the team.
So you're predicting Byron Scott will no longer be with the team.
I honestly could
how would Kobe Bryant not...
Because I could see him retiring after this season. I honestly could. Because this is going to be a very difficult season.
Oh, after this season. I thought you said by the end of this season.
Or Okay. After this season, Kobe Bryant or Byron Scott will be gone.
Okay, and that's a pretty bold prediction from John. Lakers just seem to can't find the right guy at head coach, so I could kind of buy that, I guess. And we'll move on to Nick, and before we do, please don't pick the Lakers to finish fourth in the West.
That was a really bad mistake by me. I totally forgot about Cleveland. I would say San Antonio is going to finish first. I don't think there's even a question about it. I would have to go with OKC, just like anybody else would. Like John, I agree with you 100%. I'm very, very sold on the Trailblazers because they're a very young team, and in 1 year, a young team, they have more time to gel, more time to develop, and that talent is going to show more. Last year, they were more raw. This year, they're not as raw, and they're more polished. So I could see them being a great team this year. I think they'll be better than the Rockets. Then my fourth prediction, I like the Rockets, you know, because honestly, I'm not sold on the Clippers. They've been good. They haven't gotten over the hump all these years, and I'm not sold on them. I don't think they're that good. I think they're overrated.
All right. Well, I do agree with you to an extent about the Clippers, but even if they haven't gotten over the hump, they've still finished top four the past 2 years.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying they're not a great team.
I don't think they're a championship contending team because I don't think they can beat San Antonio or OKC in a 7-game series. They can make it close, but I don't think they match up with those teams. But even still, I'll put them right there at number three behind OKC. I think they got a really deep team this year. Obviously, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin still there. It's one of the best duos in the league. And right behind LA, I don't think either of you mentioned them yet. I'm going to put the Golden State Warriors. I think the addition of Steve Kerr, I mean, we don't know how good of a coach he's going to be in his first season. But to be honest, I don't think Mark Jackson was all that special. He had a lot of talent there, especially with his backcourt and with Curry and Thompson and the addition of Andre Iguodala. I think they've really underachieved the past few years, finishing sixth and seventh in the conference. And I think they take a pretty big step forward this year and finish fourth. I think the addition of Sean Livingston was huge. And so I put those four as my top. I'm not buying the Rockets. I think they'll finish probably seventh or eighth. I think Chandler Parsons, now gone, is really going to hurt them. They got Trevor Ariza to replace him, but Parsons was huge for them last year.
I can say about the Warriors is that in terms of their shooting, their backcourt, I think they're arguably the most talented in the NBA right now. But so in terms of talent, their backcourt, all that, the shooting, if they had a truly great coach, they would be a championship caliber team. If Tom Thibodeau or Greg Popovich or maybe even Doc Rivers coached that team, they would without question be a championship caliber team. I think Mark Jackson, very good coach, but a little overrated, a little overhyped. Because of all the talent that he had, I think it's unacceptable for that team to not make it to the conference championships.
Well, to be honest, Nick, I do believe that if Greg Popovich were to coach the Philadelphia 76ers this year, I think they could be a championship contending team.
It's a bit of a stretch,
right, so,
but you never know.
A little bit. So we'll move on to our final discussion, which will be about the World Series now. Two games in, going back to San Francisco for games 3, 4, and 5. San Francisco took the first game, and then KC came back last night and got a must win, but it's very close to that. So we'll start with John. Right now the series is tied 1-1. I know you're a big believer in the Kansas City Royals. Do you want to change that? Do you still believe in Kansas City as much? Who do you think takes this World Series?
I said it from the very beginning. I'm not going to change it now. The Kansas City Royals will be your 2014 MLB World Series champions. I have no doubt about it. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the series is going back to San Francisco for 3 games, right?
Yes.
All right. I think they're going to win one of those games, okay? They're going to come home, and then they're going to win the next 2 games. I really think that this Royals team, they just have this confidence about them that you don't see among many baseball teams. And the Giants are a team that they've been to the World Series before. I don't think that – listen, they want to win. They want to win badly, but they don't
really
have that same – obviously. Okay. I don't think they have that same hunger that the Royals do, because the Royals and their fans in that city, they have not had a World Series championship since the 80s, and they want one back. They want one more. They're hungry.
Well, John, this game is the most this is such an unpredictable game, because it's the best postseason hitting team in the past 3 years or something like the past few years, and the best defensive team, and not just pitching, but in the field in general, because they have great outfielders that cover considerable range. Their infielders often cover the best range in baseball, I think. And there's no holes in their bullpen. Same thing with the Giants. So basically it's like the Giants' hitting cancels out the Royals' defense, and it's almost unpredictable. The only edge that the Giants do have is that they're more experienced. They've been to the postseason, and they clearly know exactly what to do, while the Royals, you know, they haven't been in the spotlight in 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but defensively, I love the Royals. Offensively, don't get me wrong, they're very good. They're a good offensive team too, but they can't do in the postseason what the Giants can do. Like Pablo Sandoval doesn't exactly tear it up in the regular season, but in the postseason, he tears it up. He consistently bats over 300, generates great power. He's a great bad pitch hitter. He's the biggest threat as of now. Then Buster Posey.
All right, here's what I'll say. I think at this point, I've really fallen in love with what the Kansas City Royals have done. I think they're the most fun MLB team to watch in a while in terms of their defense, just making incredible game-saving plays just game after game. And honestly, right now, they're playing baseball like it's the 1800s. They're proving everybody wrong. They're saying, I mean, the belief in baseball is you need, you know, middle-of-the-order guys who can hit 30, 35 home runs year in and year out to compete. I mean, they're winning ball games with sacrifice bunts, with stolen bases, with infield singles. I mean, they're just an incredibly fun team to watch. I love what they're doing. But I will say that I do believe that the winner of tomorrow night, Game 3, is going to take it all. I think it's such a crucial game, because if Kansas City loses this game, they go down 1-2. If they lose, I think, one of the next two games in San Francisco, then they're going to be down 2-3. And if you get the San Francisco Giants, who have won the World Series in 2010 and 2012, they're going to close the door on Kansas City. As much as I would love to see Kansas City come back and win those final two games, they know how to get it done. I've said it all along. I said St. Louis or San Francisco would be in the World Series, because these teams know how to win in October. And if they get to the point where they have three wins in the World Series, I just believe that they're going to close the door in games 6 or 7 that they're pitching with Madison Bumgarner, and you got experienced guys like Tim Hudson. I'd love to see the Royals. I will be rooting for the Royals. I'm not going to say they don't have a chance, but if they don't win tomorrow night, it's going to be really tough. Is there anything to add to that?
I do agree with you.
Yeah,
I definitely do.
Thing,
I think
the only thing the Royals don't have is any really heavy duty power hitters like the Giants have, which can work as a disadvantage. But at the same time, like Jordan, like what you said, they're using it to their advantage by working on defense, stolen bases, and smaller hits to build up the base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so running out of time, that's going to pretty much do it for our show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back probably sometime next week. We'll keep you posted on when our next episode will be. Thanks to our caller. And everyone have a great weekend. Looking forward to seeing Percy Harvin's debut with the Jets. And
looking forward to see Penn State upset Ohio State this weekend at the Whiteout.
Not happening.
Con los terroristas.